This is KVNF's regional newscast for Tuesday, August 24th. I'm Gavin Dahl. A large industrial fire broke out Monday afternoon in Grand Junction. The Grand Junction Sentinel reports the business that caught fire was Core Recycling, which moved to its location in May. The business specializes in recycling electronics, such as computers and televisions. Multiple engines from Grand Junction Fire Department responded to the blaze, which pumped out thick, acrid smoke. No information on the cause of the fire is available at this time. Small Colorado hops growers are navigating new business terrain, and craft breweries are turning to sources in the Pacific Northwest. More than 95% of the hops grown in the United States come from Washington, Idaho, and Oregon, according to Hops Growers of America. In 2020, Coloradans harvested 147 acres of hops, compared to almost 59,000 acres in those three states. Here on the Western Slope, hops grow well. The arid climate helps prevent mildew growth, and the elevation intensifies our many sunny days. In 2010, Miller Coors debuted a beer made entirely with local ingredients, including hops. The Denver Post reports the Colorado native brew still has 7 year-round flavors. But according to Scott Dorch, brewer and agronomist at Odell Brewing in Fort Collins, volume is a hindrance to leveraging local hops. What brewers are looking for is volume, quality, consistency, and price point. Recently, breweries have turned to Lupulin Exchange, an online spot marketplace, which enables small brewers to purchase just the hops they need. Instead of buying in larger quantities for the next 3 months, local breweries profiled in the article are now buying hops for 3 weeks at a time. A campaign to preserve the oldest commercial building in Cedar Edge, known as the Short Branch, is underway. The Surface Creek Valley Historical Society wants to move the Short Branch and use it for part of the Pioneer Town Museum, where it would house additional exhibits and a library. The cost of this project is estimated at $50,000, and the group has launched a GoFundMe page. Details of the plan are at pioneertown.org. When mudslides carried debris across Interstate 70 in Glenwood Canyon, the impact went beyond just closing the roadway. As KUNC's Alex Hager reports, they reshaped the course of the Colorado River.
Multiple debris flows forced dirt, rock, and trees into the river, and that created new bends for water to flow around. A few of those could cause future problems for the interstate, where new pools could swell with heavy rains or spring runoff and spill onto the road. Mike Willis is Colorado's Emergency Management Director.
The river doesn't care that there's an interstate there or not. It's perfectly happy to flow right over I-70 as she makes her way downriver.
To help prevent flooding, Willis says they'll try to dig away some of the mud and debris with excavators. That work is set to begin in the next month and a half and should wrap up before next spring. I'm Alex Hager.
Southwest Colorado is facing a housing crisis, just like many other rural communities. To combat the problem, local organizations are building affordable housing developments. But the housing crisis is a complex issue, and additional housing inventory won't solve it alone. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Lucas Brady Woods from KSJD in Cortez has this report.
In southwest Colorado's Montezuma County, what little housing is available just isn't affordable for many residents. Rents are being pushed higher and higher because there's such low housing inventory in the region.
Folks can't afford our high rents. Our wage scale here is fairly low, so we've got folks that just literally are paying way too much of their income to stay housed.
That's Kelly Willis. She's the executive director of the Pinion Project Family Resource Center, a nonprofit that provides a variety of services to Montezuma County residents. The organization has a handful of subsidized housing units available for low-income individuals. Willis says the organization also has plans to build a 50-unit affordable housing complex in Montezuma County. Tenants there will have a portion of their rent covered based on their income.
Everybody, regardless of income, 30% of their income, if they have it, is what their rent remains. And it's not transitional housing, so it's not time limited. People can remain there as long as they need to.
Housing projects like this take time, though, and the Pinion Project's development hasn't even started construction yet. Willis says it's still looking for financing. That means it won't be move-in ready for another 2 years at least. Another affordable housing project in the area is being built by the Montezuma County Housing Authority. That project will include about 40 units, but won't be finished for a while either. According to the Housing Authority's executive director, it won't be move-in ready for over a year. but there are hundreds of people in Montezuma County who are struggling with housing insecurity right now. Willis says the waitlists on Pinion Project properties alone have around 400 people on them. On top of that, resources are especially scarce in Southwest Colorado for people who are experiencing housing emergencies, such as homelessness or unsafe living conditions. And the few that are available are only temporary fixes.
There's really not a lot of options for unhoused. Hopefully, we have put what I think is probably a Band-Aid on a lot of our emergency needs for housing.
And even when the affordable housing projects are finally built, they'll probably only scratch the surface of the housing crisis. The city of Durango in neighboring La Plata County is the closest population center to Montezuma County. Carrie Harrison is the head of Oak Tree Resources, an organization that helps youth find housing in Durango. She says that Durango already has several subsidized apartment buildings, but that they didn't make much of a dent in the housing crisis.
Even though we have the affordable housing built in Durango, they're all sitting full, and we don't have the supply available that is even close to being affordable.
Harrison also says using affordable housing as a solution has limitations.
Whether it be the young person I'm working with or a 30-year-old, that working adult who still can't afford a place to rent, they don't qualify for affordable housing, and they're floundering.
Dr. Benjamin Waddell is a professor at Fort Lewis College in Durango. He studies poverty and systemic inequality, and he thinks that people need to shift their thinking when they consider possible solutions to the housing crisis. For example, he says there are some concrete steps communities can take to redistribute some of the wealth that's concentrated around housing.
One of the ways that towns like Durango need to look at this is by looking at lodgers' taxes. I think they need to be more aggressive.
He also says it's important to remember there are factors outside the housing market that are interrelated with the housing crisis.
We've seen the inflation of higher education, the inflation of medical costs. We've seen the inflation of transportation costs across the board. Housing, you see this inflation of costs, but wages have really just kind of flatlined.
Waddell says that if members of a community can't afford to access essential services because their wages are too low, they can't change their economic situation. And that creates inequality in areas like housing. Carrie Harrison, back at Oak Tree Resources, also thinks people need to start shifting the way they think about the housing crisis.
People need to educate themselves. We need to educate people on how easy it is for someone to struggle with housing insecurity. And the focus has to change regarding what homelessness is or the potential for homelessness.
Because, she says, anyone, including her own family, could be one paycheck away from housing insecurity. For KSJD News and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Lucas Brady Woods.
This story is part of a Rocky Mountain Community Radio reporting collaboration on affordable housing, funded by the Solutions Journalism Network. Special thanks to Kate Redmond. I'm Gavin Dahl.